flew carefully with the divided kingdom. The cutting-edge Christian news program that Elizabeth Cuffett Carefully and I have been broadcasting worldwide on networks since December 2005. We are thankful lately for some listener support. We will never just dump our shortwave listeners without warning, as did another leading Christian news program a couple of years ago. The rationale, supposedly, was that thousands of dollars came from iPhone listeners, not people turning or tuning into shortwave. We hear very little about that broadcaster, and that broadcast envisioned big dreams, such as massive TV outreach. No, we do our best to be honest with truth as we find it, and try to treat others with the biblical golden rule. So it is a great joy to get letters from many of you, and some donations. Here is a recent note that came to encourage us, with a cash donation enclosed. Quote, Luna Elizabeth, enjoy your program each week. Excellent info. Great work. Stay strong. God bless you. Signed, Jim. Thank you, Jim, and you others who are always in our hearts and prayers.
Psalm 92. It is a good thing to give thanks unto the Lord, and to sing praises unto thy name, O Most High, to show forth thy loving kindness in the morning, and thy faithfulness every night, upon an instrument of 10 strings, and upon the psaltery, upon the harp with a solemn sound. For thou, Lord, hast made me glad through thy work. I will triumph in the works of thy hands. O Lord, how great are thy works, and thy thoughts are very deep. A brutish man knoweth not, neither doth a fool understand this. When the wicked spring as the grass, and when all the workers of iniquity do flourish, it is that they shall be destroyed forever. But thou, Lord, art most high for evermore. For lo, thine enemies, O Lord, for lo, thine enemies shall perish. All the workers of iniquity shall be scattered. But my horn shalt thou exalt like the horn of a unicorn. I shall be anointed with fresh oil. Mine eye also shall see my desire on mine enemies, and mine ears shall hear my desire of the wicked that rise up against me. The righteous shall flourish like the palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those that be planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bring forth fruit in old age. They shall be fat and flourishing, to show that the Lord is upright. He is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him.
Only unwavering faith and commitment to our Savior, Jesus Christ, will provide security and hope in these uncertain days. Our very important warning broadcast of September 27th, titled Beware of the Ides of Midterms, documented a planned earthquake of ugliness and violence. These concerns just keep echoing into this week and threatening us beyond. From WorldNet Daily, Antifa to Kavanaugh and Cruz, quote, you are not safe, unquote. Twitter and Facebook are eager to take down or block users who violate their terms of service, but only if they swing to the right of the spectrum. After Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas, was driven from a restaurant in D.C., by a group called Smash Racism DC, a branch of Antifa, the activists took to Twitter and Facebook to delight in their supposed victory. On both platforms, the radical leftists broke several terms of service, but so far managed to escape unscathed from the social media police. On Twitter, the activists posted a lengthy series of tweets, quote, no, you can't eat in peace. Your politics are an attack on all of us. Your votes are a death wish. Your votes are hate crimes, unquote. After describing their protest of Ted Cruz, they said, quote, while our interruption does not compare in scale to the interruptions his actions as a senator have had on millions of American lives, we hope that it reminds Cruz and others like him that they are not safe from the people they have hurt. This is a message to Ted Cruz, Brett Kavanaugh, Donald Trump, and the rest of the racist, sexist, transphobic, and homophobic right-wing scum. You are not safe. We will find you. We will expose you. We will take you. Well, we will take from you the peace you have taken from so many others, unquote.
Lou,
yes.
This is something interesting. You know, I went to get Psalm 52, did I not?
Yes.
And instead, the Lord had me make a, quote, mistake. I read Psalm 92, and it just seemed to fit this situation exactly, didn't it? But
yes.
Those of you who want to go back and check what Psalm 52 says, you can do that later. But Psalm 92 is a little bit more hopeful. It is more stringent against the wicked, that they are not going to prosper, that this violence that is projected ahead, perhaps even the idea that they are going to bring our total country into complete anarchic chaos, this is not going to succeed with the prayers of all of you listeners and all other true Christians in this country. Because, you know, we do not have meanness in our hearts. That's not really the American way. And because I didn't plan on mentioning this, I think I have a clipping in our living room, and it was about an actor who was a child actor on the Bill Cosby show, and apparently lately somebody tried to humiliate him by showing that he had a job at Trader Joe's. So after that, a lot of ugliness, this kind of Antifa-type mindset, erupted all over the Internet. But you know what that did, Lou? That brought a big backlash, a whole lot of people supporting him, and now he has been offered at least three good acting offers. See, this is the heart of middle-class America, not all of the elitists. And I don't believe for one minute that all elitists like this Antifa. After all, they're going to have to all flee to gated communities, maybe beyond this country, if all of this is let loose. So I think that we can feel comforted here today that the Lord is on our side. He made me turn to a different psalm. But now, let's get back to it. It's even more shocking than what you just had told us about. What is the latest?
This latest news was breaking on October 2nd, 2018. From WorldNet Daily.
And you don't mean October 22nd.
Did I say that?
I think you
October
did.
October 2nd. Excuse
and
me.
And again,
yeah.
You see, we're getting close to Halloween.
Yes,
you see,
that's right.
All of these innuendos, they're operating on us. We're thinking about the spiritual darkness and the battle that we're in. Go back to it.
Yes, from WorldNet Daily. This is entitled, Pentagon, Ted Cruz Office Hit with Potentially Poisonous Mail. The Pentagon has intercepted at least two packages thought to contain the poisonous substance known as ricin, the Associated Press reports. The packages were caught Monday, that would be October 1st, during a screening in a separate building on the Pentagon grounds, a spokesman tells AP. The spokesman wouldn't say who the packages were addressed to, but a U.S. official said they were headed for Defense Secretary Jim Mattis and Chief of Naval Operations John Richardson. All the mail from Monday is under quarantine and, quote, poses no threat to Pentagon personnel, unquote, another spokesman said. Ricin is made from castor beans, and inhaling it could lead to low blood pressure and respiratory failure. The FBI is investigating the incident. And let me interject here that they don't say it here, but I've heard on the radio, ricin is one of the deadliest poisons there is. It can cause death in a matter of a few hours under the right circumstances, or perhaps I should say the wrong circumstances. The article goes on to say the Pentagon packages arrived Monday, but around noon on Tuesday, two people were hospitalized at Senator Ted Cruz's Houston campaign office after, quote, apparently being exposed to a white powdery substance, unquote, in a piece of mail. The Houston Fire Department tweeted, ricin can take such a form, but an investigation into the substance is still ongoing, Houston's ABC affiliate reports. The entire building was evacuated, though it has since reopened after hazardous substance testing proved negative. So we'll find out more about that in the days to come. And now, Dr. Larry Spaugimino in the September 2018 Prophetic Observer informs us not every liberal thinks liberals are winners. A new grassroots movement started by a disgruntled liberal is urging Democrats who are fed up with the ugly direction the party has taken in recent years, especially the Maxine Waters meanness and recent liberal meltdowns of the sort we've seen in the Whoopi Goldberg rant against Judge Jeanine, is urging fed-up Democrats to dance to a different tune. Brandon Straker, a.k.a. the unsilent majority, kicked off the, and I think you call that hashtag walkaway campaign, from his May 26 video, Why I Left Liberalism and the Democratic Party. In the video, Straker says, it is up to all of us to make our voices heard and reclaim the truth. The Democratic Party has taken for granted that it owns racial, sexual, and religious minorities in America. It has encouraged groupthink, hypocrisy, division, stereotyping, resentment, and the acceptance of victimhood mentality. And all the while, they have discouraged minorities from having independent thought, open dialogue, measured and informed opinion, and a motivation to succeed. Straker, a gay man from Nebraska, says that he is one of the liberals who melted down in November of 2016 after Trump was elected.
And I'm not sure, Lou, his name may be Straker. You and I are not sure because we're really not on the internet, the social media that much.
True.
But I have a feeling that it is Straker. I think perhaps I've heard it.
It could well be, yes. Walking away, however, hasn't been easy. The kindly progressives are angry. On July 7th, Straker was on with Judge Jeanine. He said that he tried to purchase camera equipment at a New York City store, but was questioned by the cashier, who said, quote, are you planning to use this equipment for alt-right purposes, unquote. He recognized Straker from his campaign and did not support the walkaway campaign. Straker said that following his encounter with a salesperson, he started shaking because he had never experienced a negative backlash like that before. He was frightened because the store had his personal information and didn't know what they would do with it.
We have to interrupt. Are we beginning to see, listeners, how this can eventually get into our everyday life? That social score that is being taken by Google and Facebook through the Communist China route, the One World Order. And we know that Communist China was to play a big role. Dr. Dennis Cuddy had writings on this, that they were sort of the factory model, you see, for all the slave workers. We've heard about these suicide nets that Alex Jones claims are there under Apple's dominion. All of these things are things that we must resist because there is no country on earth that still has the freedom that we yet have, despite the Patriot Act, despite various kinds of laws and executive orders. No, we are still under God's control. Pick it up, Lou.
And let me just interject a little comment of my own. Recently, I had a birthday, and what did I see as part of my job?
Yes, yesterday. Well, actually,
yes.
We're talking to you on Wednesday, October 3rd.
Yes.
And you'll be hearing us on the 4th, October 4th. So his birthday was October 2nd, and he turned 71.
That's right. And what did I see when I went on the Internet, and I had to get to Google, because our email comes through Google now, but I saw a little thing that said, Happy Birthday Carefully, as a little pretty little message at the top. I suppose they do this for everyone. Now, I'm not quite sure how they got my birthday, but somehow they did, and I'm quite sure I never gave it to Google directly, because I haven't subscribed to their websites or anything, but I guess they have ways of checking on these things.
And I realize that that's a very minor kind of thing. But you see, our use of the Internet is very, very, very sparse, very limited. So, of course, we do have the divided kingdom. And so I guess that must put us out there. Dr. Stan said, oh, of course, they have a dossier on you. So we don't know. But all we know is that to God's eyes, everything is transparent. The web will never go completely dark. There'll never be anything hidden from the Lord. He knows everything. He is omniscient. Well, let's find out about Mr. Straker. What else happened?
It goes on to say, even Democrats are having misgivings about the far-left direction of the party. USA Today reported, quote, moderate Democrats push back against wild-eyed, and that's in quotes, wild-eyed leftward lurch of the party, unquote. It reported that a group of moderate Democrat lawmakers sounded the alarm over the party's shift to the left, saying the embrace of ultra-liberal a nice way of saying insane, and that's in quotes insane, policies, could endanger their efforts to capture Congress in the November midterm elections and the White House in 2020. The continued harping of the progressives against Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, is helping progressives shoot themselves in the foot, so to speak. A recent ICE raid in Newark, New Jersey, led to the arrest of dozens of illegal aliens, the majority of which have criminal records. This reminds us that, quote-unquote, sanctuary policies are a threat to the general population. How would you feel if your wife or daughter were raped by a criminal illegal alien who remained in your neighborhood because local law enforcement deliberately refused to cooperate with federal authorities? How would you feel knowing that the humiliation and violence your loved ones have been subjected to and the emotional and physical scars that will remain in your family for a lifetime could have been avoided?
Yes, Lou. Left Coast Governor Jerry Brown's lies about how good sanctuary cities are for all of us Americans is complemented by some lying statistics, according to Yale University, about the true number of illegal immigrants in America. Yale study: illegal immigrant population likely double, possibly triple previous estimates. And this was Stephen Danan, The Washington Times, Monday, September 24, 2018. Professors at Yale University have roiled the immigration debate with a new study calculating there are between 16 million and 30 million illegal immigrants in the U.S., as much as three times more than most demographers figure. The professor's model looked at estimates of how many people came illegally and how many people likely left, and concluded there are a lot more people who arrived than the 11 million suggested by traditional estimates. The model says the most likely figure is double that, at about 22 million. If true, the numbers would mean U.S. officials have done a poorer job of catching illegal immigrants than imagined, and that one out of every nine people living in the U.S. is here illegally. Policy debates about the amount of resources to devote to this issue and the merits of alternative policies, including deportation, amnesty, and border control, depend critically on estimates of the number of undocumented immigrants in the U.S., which sets the scale of the issue, said the academics, professors Jonathan S. Feinstein and Edward H. Kaplan, and postdoctoral associate Mohammed Fazl Zarandi, all at the Yale School of Management. They published their findings in PLOS One, and that's spelled capital P, capital L, capital OS, One, an open-access scholarly journal, and sparked fierce pushback from the demographers who study the issue and say the professor's numbers are impossible. Quote, "We believe these new numbers represent at most an interesting academic exercise, but are ultimately greatly off base and thus counterproductive to the public's very real need to understand the true scope of illegal immigration and how best to address it." Analysts at the Migration Policy Institute, who were asked to do a peer review of the study, said in their response. We have to interject here. This reminds us a little bit about studies on the environment done by the oil group, the box in the chicken house. Perhaps that's just a question. Back to the article, the number of people in a country illegally has always been a touchy question and is perhaps even more freighted now under President Trump. During the 2016 campaign, Mr. Trump said the numbers could be as high as 30 million, drawing protests from fact-checkers who cited the traditional demographers. A 2005 report by analysts at Bear Stearns concluded there were 20 million illegal immigrants, far outpacing the more accepted figure at the time of about 12 million. And President Obama's deportation chief, former U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Director Sarah Saldana, once testified to Congress that the number could be 15 million. The government does do its own estimates, but they are sporadic and lag far behind. The most recent study by Homeland Security was released in July 2017 and dated back to Census Bureau numbers from January 2014, or more than 4.5 years ago. That study put the unauthorized population at 12.1 million. They and most other demographers use what's called, or what's known as the, quote, residual method, end of quote, for figuring the unauthorized population. The general idea is to take the number of people, the total number of people who claim to be foreign-born in Census Bureau survey data, then subtract the number of people who are in the country legally. The difference is deemed to be those here without permission. Each organization has its own variation for adjusting those numbers for census undercounts and other caveats, but they show illegal immigration peaked at about 12 million a decade ago and now rests somewhere near 11 million. The Yale professors, though, said there's a major problem with the survey-based methods. Quote, one must locate undocumented immigrants, and once located, subjects must truthfully report they were foreign-born, Mr. Kaplan told the Washington Times in an email. Obviously, undocumented immigrants do not wish to be found, nor is it in their interest to reveal their place of birth. He said there are tens of millions of people who fall into the category of declining to answer the surveys, and he said he and his fellow professors took a different approach. They decided to look at the number of illegal immigrants they figured arrived over the years, either jumping the border or arriving legally but overstaying their visas. They then looked at those who were deported, went back home on their own, died, or otherwise left the unauthorized population. Running the model 1 million times, they came up with a conservative estimate of 16.7 million unauthorized migrants, up to 29.5 million. They figured 22.1 million was the mean. The results of our analysis are clear. The number of undocumented immigrants in the United States is estimated to be substantially larger than has been appreciated, at least in widely accepted previous estimates, they concluded. Robert Warren, a demographer at the Center for Migration Studies, a New York-based think tank, said the professor's study didn't take into account the circular nature of migration, particularly late in the last decade when it was common for illegal immigrants from Mexico to come, work in the U.S. for a short time, go back home, then return for a future work season and repeat the cycle. And Stephen A. Camerato, a demographer at the D.C.-based Center for Immigration Studies, said there are data points such as birth, death, and school records that can be used to check the census-based figures. If there were millions of uncounted illegal immigrant women of childbearing age, there should be hundreds of thousands more births showing up in hospital records, but there aren't. Now, I have to interject there, Lou. Is it your feeling that every illegal pregnant woman would want to go to the hospital?
Well, I wouldn't think so. I think one of the objectives is not to be sent back to where they came from. And going to the hospital, I'm sure many of them fear that would happen, even if the fear might be unfounded.
That's right. Google reached you for your birthday, and
yeah.
I'm certain that some of them would be a little fearful about revealing their names and who they are. Well, back to the article. Mr. Camerata said the numbers don't match up exactly, and there will always be some margin of error, but it's nothing like the massive factor of two that the professors calculated. None of that means that 11 or 12 million estimate is rock solid. It could be off. Maybe there are an extra million, maybe there are 2 million. There's a margin of error around that number, but nearly 17 million, he said. Well, at any rate, we have some news here from September 17th. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced on that date that the Trump administration will cut the number of refugees coming into the U.S. from 45,000 to 30,000 in the next fiscal year. And this is the lowest cap on the numbers entering since the program's inception in 1980. And another, I would call it hopeful thing in keeping our country from falling into the terrible situation in Europe. And this was Time magazine, October 8th. Could a rule change make green cards harder to get? Under a new federal rule being proposed by the Trump administration, immigrants who use public benefits could be ineligible for legal status in the U.S. That would be a big new change for U.S. immigration law, and it hinges on redefining one very old phrase, public charge. The notion that immigrants should be self-sufficient is already ingrained in American law. The government has long looked at how likely someone is to become a public charge, a person who relies on public assistance to survive, when determining whether he or she will be allowed to come in or stay in the country. That exact phrase has been in use in U.S. immigration law for more than a century. But since the late 1990s, the federal government has defined public charges as people who meet a standard of being, quote, primarily dependent on the government for subsistence, end of quote, via cash assistance or long-term institutional care. The Trump administration's rule, which would not require congressional approval, would change that standard, principally by extending the category to recipients of non-cash benefits such as Medicaid, public housing, or food stamps. It could thus become harder for immigrants who use such programs to get green cards, or for those who might use them in the future to be admitted to the U.S. As leaked versions of the proposal have floated around over the past few months, advocates have expressed concern that it could have a chilling effect on the immigrant community, leading people to disengage from the services they need, like benefits for children born in the U.S. as citizens. Some say the shift has already begun. Lonrae Falusi, a pediatrician in Washington, D.C., and spokeswoman for the American Academy of Pediatrics, says she has personally encountered families opting out of nutritional programs for kids out of fear over their future immigration status. And now we'll interject again. That just supports our earlier point that there may be more illegal immigrants here than hospital records of birth would indicate because of the fear factor. Back to this article, researchers at the Migration Policy Institute have also argued that the rule could serve as a modern-day version of the National Origins Act of 1924, which restricted immigration from certain countries in order to reduce the non-white population. But supporters of the proposed rule, which does contain exceptions, for example, for refugees, say its primary purpose is merely to reduce strains on American taxpayers. In a statement on September 22nd, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen said that the rule will, quote, promote immigrant self-sufficiency and protect finite resources by ensuring that they are not likely to become burdens on American taxpayers. Lou, what do you think about that? Aren't you in favor of that idea?
Yes, I think they do need to tighten things up. There are so many welfare programs out there now, and frankly, we don't get that kind of special treatment.
No, American citizens. And you see, this is the different idea than the EU idea, in which all of those nations are being forced to open their borders and give everything, you know, to the ones coming in, the jobs, everything. Well, the rule has not yet been published to the Federal Register, but DHS says it will happen in the coming weeks. Once it is published, the public will have 60 days before it's finalized to comment. And there's no question both sides will have lots to say. That article was by Maya Rodan. We mentioned Europe. So, Lou, I think that we need to find out how are things progressing in Europe, Lou, as the forces of globalism supported by the UN and the Vatican and George Soros approve of this use of radical jihad to undermine the European national sovereignty. What's been going on there this spring and summer?
Well, on October 8, 2018, one of Time's best political world analysts, Ian Bremmer.
And I think that before we get to Ian,
yeah,
I think that we need to find out that whole situation of those four happenings.
Okay. I think.
And I believe it began in May, possibly in Belgium. I'm not
sure. Oh, yes, exactly. Belgium's shooting rampage was a terrorist act, prosecutors say. From CTV News, Brussels. The man who killed four people in the Belgian city of Liège this week carried out an act of, quote, terrorist murder, unquote, and may have intended to cause more carnage, prosecutors said Wednesday, as authorities tried to establish whether he acted alone. Benjamin Herman, an inmate on a two-day prison furlough, attacked two female police officers from behind with a knife on Tuesday, stabbing them repeatedly. I should mention, too, that this was published on May 30th, 2018. He stole their handguns and shot them as they lay on the ground, officials said. Crossing the road, he fired several shots at a 22-year-old man who was a passenger in a car, killing him. Herman then took a cleaning woman hostage at a nearby school. When police closed in, he ran out onto the sidewalk, firing, and police fatally shot him. Four officers were wounded. He yelled, "Allahu Akbar," the Arabic phrase for God is great, several times during Tuesday's rampage, prosecutors said. Officials later confirmed that Herman had also killed another person Monday. The attack has shaken Belgium, where police and military have been working overtime to guard public buildings for 2 years since coordinated suicide attacks in the Brussels airport and subway system killed 32 people and injured hundreds more on March 22, 2016. Belgian federal magistrate Wenke Rogan said Wednesday that the attack was considered, quote, terrorist murder and attempted terrorist murder, unquote. She said it's being treated as terrorism, given the way Herman acted, which she says resembled Islamic State calls via video to attack police with knives and steal their weapons. The fact that he yelled Allahu Akbar and was in contact with the radicalized people. The attack started outside a Liège cafe, and Rogan said the attacker went in and out of it a few times before shooting the officers, but that people inside had fled or hidden, thanks to the quick thinking of the owner. An investigating magistrate specializing in terrorism has ordered autopsies on those killed at the scene and a toxicology examination of the attacker. Prosecutors said Herman had had several run-ins with police since he was a minor. He has been sentenced on assault, drug, and insubordination charges. He left prison early Monday on furlough and should have returned Tuesday evening. Quote, he also committed a murder the night before, said Interior Minister Jan Jambon. And he told that to broadcaster RTL Jam, or RTL, I guess that's the name of a broadcasting company in Belgium. Jambon said the fourth victim was a former inmate who did prison time with Herman. Herman is alleged to have killed the man on Monday evening by hitting him over the head with a blunt object. Jambon added that the woman he took hostage may have talked the shooter down and helped to avoid more deaths inside the school. Jambon, Prime Minister Charles Michel, and King Philippe visited the woman in hospital where she was being treated for shock. He said, that is, Jambon said, quote, she was very courageous and perhaps, but this we still have to verify, she helped avoid more victims in the school, unquote. The cleaning woman, identified only by her first name, Darifa, told state broadcaster RTBF that Herman said he just wanted to stir up the police. He asked her if she was a Muslim and if she was observing the holy fasting month of Ramadan. The woman said, quote, he told me, don't worry, I won't do anything at all. Listen, you do what I say, but don't worry, I won't do anything to you. She said he threw his ID card on the ground before running out to confront the police. She also said, quote, I think he knew that it was all over for him, and he went out, unquote. Jambon said an investigation has been launched into the incident, including the circumstances surrounding Herman's release from prison. And he said, quote, it's really an isolated case. He wasn't part of a network. He didn't receive instructions from anyone else. So there is no need to raise the terror threat alert level. Jambon said, adding that investigators have no precise information that any other attacks might be likely. Amid questions about how two officers could have been disarmed, Jambon praised the work of all involved, saying the police did an extraordinary job. They reacted well. All the systems, all the procedures worked. But if you are attacked from behind, as was the case with the two officers, you can't do anything. The police officers have been identified as Soraya Balcasimi, 44, and Lucille Garcia, 54. The passenger in the car was named Cyril Van Grieken, 22, who was preparing to become a primary school teacher. Belgian media reports named the man killed before Tuesday's rampage as Michael Wilmet. In Liège, the mother of Soraya Balcassimi, Bernadette Hennert, kissed a necklace and waited over flowers on the scene, saying it was important for her and the victim's brother to visit the place where her daughter spent her last moments alive. Hennert said that they had come, quote, to piece things together. No one has told me very much, only through the media, and it's not nice. I can't stand watching it. I can't say goodbye to her, unquote.
And Lou, we can contrast this powerlessness once this kind of a tyranny setup is put in. So we do applaud Mike Pompeo. We applaud the Trump administration for this tightening of the green card and for the tightening up on the numbers of immigrants to come into the U.S. We think this is a step in the right direction. Well, now, moving on from Belgium, what came next? That was May, wasn't it?
Yes, that was dated May 30th. And next we have June 4th. Muslim attacker to Jew in Germany, quote, Berlin is our city now, unquote. This was posted by Art Moore, June 4th, 2018.
Oh, and you know, I have to interrupt. You know, in those wonderful countries, Germany and France, you know, we think about France, for instance, with the Eiffel Tower and so much that's just so beautiful there. But we had an activist there at Femme Solidaire, one of many French people, she was one of many French people outraged at the sight of urinals installed around Paris to curb public urination. She said, men cannot control themselves, so all of society has to adapt. And I still say, at the time of World War II, even when the Germans invaded the Nazis, I doubt that those Nazis were out in the streets relieving themselves. I really think that there's an implication here. What population group would be doing this? The same population group that is raping the women and then the government is blaming the victims. So we can see some of these immigrants' ways of life are very different. The honor killings, all of these things, they're not very civilized actions compared to Western civilization. So now let's pick up that story, Lou, that you have.
Yes, once again, this is dated June 4th, 2018, Brandenburg Gate, Berlin. Declare Berlin, quote, is our city now, unquote. A group of Arab men attacked an Israeli teen and two of his friends in the German capital after becoming enraged by hearing a Hebrew song on the Israeli's cell phone. The German language Bild newspaper, B-I-L-D, citing an Israeli newspaper, said the 17-year-old, identified only as Yonatan, and his friends were waiting for a train at the Zuo Gisha Garten station when he played a song called Tel Aviv by an Israeli singer. According to Yonatan, the Arab men shouted at him, Hebrew music? For 70 years you are murdering children. Berlin is our city now, and here we don't listen to F Jewish music, unquote. Yonatan said as he walked away, telling the men that they are free to play Arabic music, just as he is free to play Israeli music. But he and his friends were followed, he said, and one of the Arab men began to threaten him. Quote, if I had a knife, I would kill you. If I meet you again, you are finished, the man said, according to Yonatan. Yonatan said that when his two friends tried to intervene, the group attacked. One person was hit in the face and another was injured by a broken bottle, requiring hospital treatment. The Israeli newspaper Hayom reported. The paper said the incident was recorded on the train station security cameras. Yonatan told the Israeli newspaper, however, the police initially didn't take the incident seriously, allowing eyewitnesses to leave without giving testimony.
And I have to interject again that this spirit of murder and violence, it's the same spirit in this country that pushed Sarah Huckabee Sanders' family out of the restaurant, and it's the same spirit that is putting the ricin or the similar to ricin, the look-alike, and against Ted Cruz. It's this same kind of an ugly, violent, anti-Jesus kind of spirit. And it is a spiritual war we're in. It really is. And we hope that you are listening carefully here in the United States. And those of you who are in Europe, we'll be praying for you, because the tide might be starting to turn. People are becoming very nationalistic in parts of Europe. We don't want to see Western civilization go down, do we, Lou?
No, we do not. We don't want to see this kind of mob violence take over.
No. And so, well, what was the upshot then finally of what happened in that case? And by the way, you see the lack of freedom of speech there, that the person, whether he was a Jew or a Gentile, he had a right to be listening to his song, didn't he?
Absolutely.
Of course he did. So, and now it's interesting that the police did very little, according to this article. That shows the institution of the tyranny up high, and that's why we need to give thanks for the Trump administration. If we were under Hillary Clinton, by now we would have a lot of jihadis in your neighborhood and mine, I believe. That's my opinion. But pick it up, Lou. What happened then?
In April, as WorldNet Daily reported, German Chancellor Angela Merkel admitted the massive influx of Muslim refugees is behind the recent wave of anti-Semitic attacks in Germany. Merkel told Israel's Channel 10 network, quote, "We now have another phenomenon, as we have refugees or people of Arab origin who bring another form of anti-Semitism into the country," unquote. Last year, after her party took a pounding in elections, Merkel ordered the EU to intercept the vessels of refugee smugglers and escort them back to North Africa, noted Jihad Watch blogger Christine Douglas-Williams. But just 3 months later, she urged Europe to take in even more refugees and said Islam is, quote, "not the source of terror," unquote. In the interview, Merkel observed that in Germany, no Jewish nursery, school, or synagogue can be left without police protection. "This dismays us," she said. Earlier in April, a 19-year-old Syrian asylum seeker turned himself into police after being caught on video attacking a man in Berlin wearing a Jewish kippah. I think that's how you pronounce that, K-I-P-P-A. The victim, not a Jew, was 21-year-old Israeli Arab Adam Amush, who told the German broadcaster Deutsche Welle he donned a traditional Jewish skullcap as an experiment after a friend told him that wearing one in public in Germany was unsafe. Amush didn't believe it and sought to prove his friend wrong. The video shows the Syrian man whipping Amush with a belt while shouting, "Yehud," I guess that's Yehudi, or Jew in Arabic, reported the Israeli daily newspaper Haaretz. Amush told the Israeli broadcaster KAN-TV, K-A-N-TV, the attackers, quote, "kept cursing us, and my friend asked them to stop cursing. They started to get angry, and one of them ran to me, and I knew it was important to film it, because there would be no way to catch him by the time police arrived," unquote. Noting the rise in anti-Semitism in Europe, Haaretz told Jewish students have reported anti-Semitic bullying in schools in recent months, and Israeli flags were burned during a recent protest in Berlin. In April, Germany's most important music prize was given to a rap band that includes the line, quote, "my body more defined than Auschwitz inmates," drawing outrage from government officials. Across Europe, especially among youth, quote, "Jew hate is the new cool," unquote, said Abigail R. Essman, who writes from the Netherlands and New York for the Investigative Project on Terror. In January, she wrote, an alleged arson attack took place at a suburban Paris kosher supermarket on the third anniversary of the terror attack at the kosher cachet market outside of Paris, in which a Muslim terrorist killed four people after a standoff. Among the attacks in France in 2017, a Jewish woman was killed by a Muslim neighbor who pushed her out of a window, and a Jewish family was robbed and held hostage. The assailants allegedly said, quote, "you're Jews, so where is the money," unquote. So Sweden also has seen a disproportionate number of anti-Semitic attacks recently, Esmond said. In December, Muslims hurled Molotov cocktails at Jewish teens at a synagogue party in Gothenburg, and firebombs were planted at a Jewish cemetery in Malmo. At a Stockholm protest against President Trump's call to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, the New York Times reported, a speaker called Jews, quote, apes and pigs, unquote, a common anti-Jewish epithet. And in Malmo, according to the Times, children at a Jewish kindergarten played behind bulletproof glass. So these times are not very good in Europe.
No, and you see how Satan has a very big, pervasive plan. This kind of hatred can be Antifa for our Constitution and our Republic. It can be the EU plan for the one world government that's kind of back of a lot of this, the George Soros ideas. It can be the anti-Semitism. Anything that falls into hating your neighbor. You see, we're to be our brother's keeper. Well, what happened next? Okay, what's the next incident?
All right, now we move the clock up to Tuesday, August 21st, 2018. This is by Rowan Scarborough, The Washington Times, entitled, Iranians Charged with Spying on Jews in U.S. Raise Specter of Assassination Plots Here. The Justice Department has charged two Iranians with spying on Jewish and opposition groups in the U.S., and the court documents suggest Tehran's hardline Islamic regime is hunting for bombing and assassination targets. Al-Madreza Dorzhdara and Mahid Ghorbani were indicted on charges of being illegal agents of a foreign power, Iran. On a wiretap, Mr. Ghorbani, a California resident, is heard singling out an opposing figure for assassination. M-blank-F needs one. One shot, he said. The charges were filed as President Trump embarked on a get-tough policy toward Iran, which the State Department has designated as the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism. Mr. Trump this spring pulled out of the 2015 international nuclear deal with Tehran, negotiated by the Obama administration, and has embarked on a campaign to get other countries to join the U.S. in reapplying economic sanctions against Tehran. The Justice Department charging documents say the two men specifically targeted Jewish centers in Chicago, as well as an anti-regime opposition rally in New York last year and a convention in Washington this year.
And do we really think that this is only going to target Jewish people in America if we do not stop this global use of the radical jihad thugs and try to infiltrate our country? Of course not. Christians are next. Go ahead, Lou.
The Justice Department charging documents say the two men specifically targeted Jewish centers. I believe I already read that. The New York protest was organized by Moshe Hedden Al-Khalq, K-H-A-L-Q, an exiled Iranian dissident group known as the MEK. The MEK is the main component of the National Council of Resistance of Iran, the umbrella group calling for the overthrow of Iran's ruling mullahs. Iran has been the scene of anti-regime street protests for months. Said an FBI affidavit, quote, the government of Iran considered the MEK to be a primary opponent of the current regime and has sought to eradicate the MEK. The affidavit said the Iranians created a, quote, target package, unquote, that, quote, could enable a neutralization plan, which may include apprehension, recruitment, cyber exploitation, or capture-kill operations, unquote. Iran has targeted foes in Europe for eradication, but pursuing such plans on U.S. soil would represent an escalation in the clash with the West. European police broke up a suspected Iranian plot to ignite a bomb at an MEK rally outside Paris this summer. The Iranian regime denounces the MEK as a terrorist organization, noting its presence on the U.S. terrorist organization list from 1993 to 2012. Ghulamali Khosrou, Iran's ambassador to the United Nations, sent a letter to the U.N. Security Council, demanding that the U.S. drop its support of the organization and complaining of the links between the group and top advisors to the president, such as National Security Advisor John R. Bolton and presidential attorney Rudolph W. Giuliani. Documents show how easily Iranian saboteurs can move in and out of the U.S., even with Iran now in the list of seven countries named in the Trump administration's travel ban. Mrs. Dutstar, who has dual citizenship, was born in Long Beach, California, but has spent most of his life in Canada and Iran. Mr. Rabbani was raised in Iran. In 2015, he became a U.S. legal permanent resident and lives in Costa Mesa, California. An FBI search of Mr. Dutstar's electronic devices showed he canvassed a number of targets. In July 2017, he traveled from Tehran to Chicago. The FBI placed him under physical surveillance and followed him to the Oriental Institute Museum at the University of Chicago. Quote, and this is from the affidavit, quote, Dutstar moved through the museum in an unusual fashion and was alone in a small room with an unidentified female for a short time, unquote. He then left the museum, walked a few blocks, and began photographing several Jewish centers, such as the Hillel Center and Ror Shabbat Center. Later, he traveled to Costa Mesa and met with Mr. Grabani for the first time. The FBI said, quote, Dutstar employed intelligence tradecraft and ran surveillance detection routes before, during, and after his meetings with Grabani, unquote. It was Mr. Grabani who surveilled the MEK at a New York rally and photographed individual anti-regime protesters. Mr. Dutstar entered the U.S. again in December, immigration officials discovered. Immigration officials discovered $6,000 in cash, which he claimed was money to repay a brother. He denied meeting with anyone on his previous U.S. visit. He traveled again to Costa Mesa. A wiretap captured a phone call to Mr. Grabani, during which Mr. Dutstar identified himself as, quote, Uncle Sohrab, unquote. The FBI listened to their car ride as Mr. Grabani delivered a briefing on his New York trip. He said, quote, I took some pictures and collected some information of them and some senators that they worked with, unquote. Mr. Dutstar instructed him on how to mix his photos with family pictures in a flash drive to avoid arousing suspicions of custom agents at airports. Quote, I noticed they don't search these at all. I put it right in front of them. They didn't even open it, he said. He said he would take the photos back to Iran. Quote, I will give it to the guys to do their research, he said. When Mr. Dutstar left the U.S. in December, authorities inspected his checked baggage and found the rally photographs. The FBI affidavit said he ultimately provided the drive to the Iranian government. Mr. Grabani left the U.S. for Iran in March and returned a month later. A luggage search showed he had instructions on future MEK spying. By then, Mr. Grabani had infiltrated MEK associates as a supposed ally. He was invited to attend a convention in Washington in May. FBI surveillance showed Mr. Grabani constantly taking photographs of attendees. Mr. Dutstar returned to the U.S. in July, this time with $16,000 in cash. Quote, the policy of appeasement has so emboldened the clerical regime that it has directly targeted the U.S. soil with its Iranian agents, something unprecedented in the past 40 years, said Ali Safavi, an opposition official based in Washington. And he also said, quote, for this reason, all of Tehran's known and undercover agents and mercenaries who pursue the regime's plots in the U.S. must be identified and prosecuted, unquote. Mr. Safavi attended the New York rally. His name is mentioned by Mr. Grabani as an assassination target. Said Assistant Attorney General John Demers, quote, Dutstar and Grabani are alleged to have acted on behalf of Iran, including by conducting surveillance of political opponents and engaging in other activities that could put Americans at risk. With our arrest and these charges, we are seeking to hold the defendants accountable. Unquote.
And you know, Lou, all this is going on. At the same time, we have that ridiculous kind of Mueller inquiry into Russian collusion. We'd better get our eyes open. Isn't there one more article, too, that brings everything up to date into Europe?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Let's go right to that one.
All right, this is from the Netherlands. Attack on quote-unquote big event foiled. This was from, let me see now, Le Monde, a French newspaper.
The it English means translation. The world.
That's right.
World.
And it's dated September 28th, 2018. The Netherlands has decided not to increase the level of the terrorist threat after the arrest Thursday, September 27th, of seven men ages 21 to 34 suspected of planning a major attack. The alert is maintained at 4 on a scale of 5. 400 police officers and members of special investigation units have been mobilized for this vast operation, which took place simultaneously in Rotterdam, Arnhem, and three other localities in the south of the country. Arrested persons were to be presented to a judge by Friday. According to the authorities, the entire group was dismantled. The seven men were preparing an attack against, quote-unquote, a big event, reported the head of investigations, Robert Paulison. The authorities, apparently looking for specific clues, did not specify, Friday, what could have been this target. Some sources mentioned a fair that was to take place in, I believe it's pronounced Weert, W-E-E-R-T, in the province of Limburg. A rental van registered in France was seized in this locality without it being known if this has a link with one of the suspects who lived in this locality. According to initial evidence, the group was planning, in fact, several types of action with explosive belts, a car packed with explosives and heavy weapons. Five handguns were seized Thursday, but said the prosecution, members of the group were looking for assault rifles, grenades, and products for the manufacture of explosives. It was their progress in the preparations that apparently triggered Thursday's operations when the intelligence services had spotted the suspicious activity of that cell for several months. The alleged leader of the network was known to the police and justice. Hardy N., 34, an Arnhem resident of Iraqi origin, was arrested in 2014 while planning to join ISIS in Syria. He said he was, quote, a believer, not a radical, unquote, and he not denied wanting to become a fighter. In 2016, however, he had been sentenced to 3 months imprisonment and 21 months on probation for 3 years. The other individuals arrested on Thursday were planning to return to Syria. A fourth had been arrested recently while photographing an Air Force base in Volkel. Although the Netherlands has been spared by large-scale attacks so far, they have foiled a series of projects since July 2013, when, on the basis of information provided by the U.S. NSA, they arrested several members of a jihadist cell. In March 2016, a Frenchman was arrested in Rotterdam on suspicion of preparing an action in the Netherlands and France. In December of the same year, a Dutchman of Moroccan origin was apprehended in the same country carrying a weapon and ammunition. In April, other men were arrested in the south of the country for spreading Islamist propaganda on the web and the terrorist training organization. So there you have it.
Yes, it's a serious situation everywhere. And this new situation we have with the ricin, or the similar type of looking substance, we need a lot of prayer. So we do ask you to pray for our country, pray for the Trump administration, and you can write to us at Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. You can put a little cash in if you have money. You can write us letters of encouragement if you don't have money. And we just hope and pray for the best for America. Good night.